Hello and welcome to My Star Wars Life Debt. I'm Johnny Orme, your host, and today we're doing something a bit unconventional. I'm going to interview a non-Star Wars fan. We're about to start the interview in just a second. Please forgive us if there are any audio problems. This isn't exactly a great setup, and we're going to be recording in a large warehouse, so it could be a bit echoey, but bear with us, and I'm sure it'll be a great chat. Okay, here we go. Hello and welcome to this special run of Life Debt podcast episodes. I'm your host, Johnny Orme, and it's Mando week. Really could have done with some more fun stuff going on in the background there. Yes, as of today being Monday, 5 days. Until the Mandalorian Season 2 starts. So, for the next 4 days, we're going to be putting out the Patreon-exclusive, well, the formerly Patreon-exclusive Life Debt commentary episode for the Mandalorian Season 1 to catch up with the goings-on in the Mando universe. So, we're just going to dive straight in. Coming up with chapter 1 and chapter 2 this episode. Tuesday will be chapter 3 and 4. Wednesday, 5 and 6. And Thursday, 7 and 8. So, you've got a good couple of hours of audio content coming out just about every day this week. That's a bonus, isn't it? As well as content on the blog. So come on over to mystarswordpress.com to check out Mando Week on the blog as well. So without further ado, I'm going to leave you guys to it and jump straight into the first commentary episode. So just want to say thank you for listening. And enjoy This Is The Way. Hello and welcome to the first episode of the Life Debt commentaries for the $5 tier on Patreon. For the next 8 episodes, I'm going to be going through The Mandalorian Season 1. And then after that, we'll figure out what we're going to be, what I'll be doing, commentaries on. I am joined by my wonderful furry co-host, Lily the cat. So basically what it's going to be is I'm going to be watching the episode, on Disney Plus, and, I'll be talking about it as it plays out. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start, let it load, right, I've paused it, I've gone right to the beginning, so when I say start, you start the episode as well, and we'll talk Mandalorian, chapter 1, The Mandalorian. So, 3, 2, 1. Here we go. Now, I gotta say, I like the Disney Plus logo. I'm being asked to skip intro. I'm not gonna skip intro. Let's keep going. I've gotta say, I'm not a huge fan of this flashing lights and helmets. Intro. It's cool and all, but I just don't like it. So, we're opening up on the planet. I've got to say, like, straight up, this is like the best intro to anything I've seen for a long, long time. It just wonderfully establishes the entire world, it establishes the character, and I've not enjoyed an intro so much since From Dusk Till Dawn, where I think the first 5-10 minutes is just genius. So yeah, I love the bar. I love all the patrons in there. And something I've just noticed, like, the guy who stands up at the table where Horatio Sanz is blue guild character, there's a guy in a hat who stands up next to him. I didn't realise it before, but he's got a robot arm. I found out, I was listening to an interview with Dominic Pace, who is in this episode and in episode 3, that the kind of bearded thug who is threatening Bluegill guy also is the guy in the suit of the Heavy Mandalorian in episode 3, which is pretty cool. I love the fact that they're using a Quarren. You know, it's like really cool nod to the original trilogy, good old Squidhead. I really enjoy the fight as well. Like, the action, it's... The fight itself is very fast-paced. It's bang, 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 done. And then you get the Squidhead getting cut in half, which is pretty brutal, but well done. Oh, it's a Mithril. That's his name, Mithril. Now, when this first came out and everyone was going, oh, it's Horatio Sanz, it's Horatio Sanz, I had no clue who they were talking about. I had to Google him. And he's an actor from SNL, which, you know, being in the UK, we don't get SNL here. But, you know, I mean, he plays it well. It's an enjoyable character. I don't know why. I kind of could imagine... what's his name? David Brent. Ricky Gervais as this character as well. Which I think would have also been pretty funny. I just love the music here. Ding, da ding, da ding, da ding. As you lead him across the ice to the Garandin ferryman, and I think this guy is really cool as well, playing the flute. And you get it, and the speeder's arriving. Now, I've heard a lot of people kind of complaining about the CGI on this speeder, and I think I can understand it. But, you know, I mean, what are you going to do? You know, it still looks pretty good. And I like this idea of having a droid built into a vehicle. We see that, well, an astromech droid built into a vehicle. We see it a few times through the series. And, you know, it's one of those things that you can completely and utterly understand. But you kind of sit there going, why didn't I think of that? Why didn't I kind of think, oh, that could happen? Is it Brian Posehn who plays the speeder driver? I'd seen him in a couple of things, but I'll always remember him from Big Bang Theory. And I've seen some of his stand-up, and he's quite a funny guy. So it was kind of cool to see him. They get a lot of comedians on here, which I think is interesting. Here we get to see our first proper look at the Razor Crest. May I just say, I cannot wait for this Lego set. I want that thing so bad. And for once, not just because of Baby Yoda. I love hearing the Horatio Sanz going on about how he'll pay for like different things and stuff. You could just tell he's trying to, you know, buy off Mando. And he keeps trying even though it never works. Gotta say, I was gutted to see Brian Posehn go.
in that moment when the creature just burst out of the ice. And like just this ominous feel of like it's definitely approaching the Razor Crest now. And is it gonna get him? Nope. But it does latch on to the Razor Crest. I mean, that's a massive sea space walrus, isn't it? I really like kind of in the cockpit where you get to see all the lights reflected in Mando's helmet. I just think, you know, it's just so well done. It really kind of just adds to the scene. And we get to see his pulse rifle in action. I mean, we don't get to see it properly in action in this episode, but we get to see him using it here to zap Space Walrus. again, I'm going to say I really like the ship. I really like the Razor Crest. And, you know, a really cool thing to learn from Celebration last year, that the Razor Crest is actually a practical vehicle that they filmed using, like, kind of the old school techniques from when they were making the original trilogy. And they're using models and, you know, passing cameras and all that jazz. And I think it looks really great. You know, it really adds to that kind of the feel that this was kind of set around the original trilogy. So you get this scene, like you get to learn more about Mando as a character, not just as a, you know, the first sequence was, you know, we get to see the attitude and, you know, kind of his fighting and, you know, the way he kind of operates. Here we get to see kind of like, you know, he's the lone gunman, he doesn't talk, he doesn't want to talk. And by the way, who wants to know about molting and vac tubes? I mean, I think it's cool we get to see a Star Wars toilet, but this guy's just grim. But it's a really cool way of getting to see, you know, how Mando lives as well. So, you know, the vac tube is right there. There's a bunk right next to it. And you know, right next to that is a cabinet full of weapons. And then next to that is a bunch of, what are they called? A bunch of bounties frozen in carbonite on the ship. You know, it's like you get to see how living this way is a very quiet, lonely life. So we've got a Rodian, we've got a human, and what was the other one? Oh, it's two humans and a Rodian that he's got already caught. This is something that I really enjoy. The fact that they can play Mando like a horror story as well. So, like, the way Mando just kind of appears in places, you know, it is like watching a horror movie, you know, like, you get to, it's like, oh, look, I'm okay. Bang, the creature is behind you. So we're on, I think it's Navarro now, which is the home of the Bounty Hunters Guild in Greef Karga. You know, getting Mando walking through the streets and into this bar. And I love, this is almost like the cantina in New Hope, just the different creatures that are in there. I mean, you've got Trandoshans that kind of look like really bad Klingons from Star Trek Into Darkness. just tons of different aliens. Rodians. I think I saw a Twi'lek in there, but I might be wrong. And I'll be honest, I've not seen Carl Weathers in much before this, but this guy is like full-on 80s, 90s action hero in this. And we get to see kind of where the galaxy is, you know. He's trying to pay him in Imperial credits, but, you know, no, he doesn't want to take Imperial credits because, you know, who's going to buy it, spend them? And then you've got Calamari Flan. And he can only pay in half because that's probably all the Calamari Flan he's got. Now, I'm not sure, but I think I just saw an IG unit. But I might have been wrong behind Grief Karga. And here we get Grief's goons taking the carbonized thugs, goons. And then Manda's trying to get another job. And basically it's just, you know, nothing work. Bail jumpers and a wanted smuggler. Now, speculation could say this wanted smuggler was Han Solo, which would be pretty cool. But at this point, he'll be living like the living the high life at this point. Ben Solo would be 4 years old, so it'll be after the events of Last Shot. You know, he's being a father and a husband, and here we get the big job. You know, things are very different to how it's operated. And this is interesting, you know, you get, this is how the Bounty Hunter Guild operates. So you get pucks and fobs and chain codes and all this stuff. But is that how Vader was operating when he hired the Bounty Hunters in Empire Strikes Back? Part of me doesn't think so. Part of me just thinks he contacted them and they arrived. So we get to see some off-world Jawas, the first time we see off-world Jawas in the season, which is pretty cool. Mando walking through the streets. You know, I really like the way that they do this. You know, the streets just look so fantastic, so lived in. You know, they're just like pretty much like four or five different buildings that just keep getting moved around and bit of blue screen, or it's not even blue screen, is it? It's those LED wraparound screens that they project everything. I love the door droid thing. Okay. You know, it's like, so many callbacks to the original trilogy, and it's not like, it doesn't feel like fan service. It just, everything feels so right in a way, like necessary. This is the world that we're in. This is where we're at this point in the timeline of the galaxy. And then you walk into a room, you've got a room full of stormtroopers who have definitely seen better days. And, the man, the legend, the client, Werner Herzog, who, if anyone could say this guy does not have presence and doesn't steal the show before Baby Yoda steals the show, you got to be lying. Just everything he says just feels like you could just so easily quote him, and it will just slot in there so nicely. I kind of want to turn around and say and tell people, you know, walk around with someone and saying, please excuse his lack of decorum. And you see how badass Mando is. He's like, there's four of us. Yeah, I'll take those odds. Oh, just so well done. So I'd never noticed it until someone pointed it out to me. Or it was pointed out on Twitter or Facebook, that Dr. Pershing has a cloner's symbol from Kamino on his tunic. So it kind of makes you go, ooh. And then they've revealed this block of metal that we find out is Beskar. And they're trying to, you know, they're telling him the job. You got to find this person. Bounty hunting is a complicated profession. Oh, I love this voice. Proof of termination is also acceptable for a lower fee. Oh, brilliant. Oh, every word, everything he says is just gold. And this is also kind of part of the whole, you know, just you learn more about Mandalorian lore as well. And this is where we find out that the bounty is 50 years old and the last known position. I mean, it's not a lot of information to go on, but you kind of get the feeling that this guy is, you know, gonna get the job done anyway. I mean, he is the hero of the series. This is interesting. The Beskar belongs in the hands of Mandalorian. It's good to restore the natural order after such a period of disarray. It's like, okay, so something's gone on with the Mandalorians. And then, you know, of course, like the upcoming scene, you know, we learn a bit more. That's just horrible. Kowakian monkey lizards being roasted. How dare they? I mean, I won't mind them roasting Salacious Crumb. He's annoying. But, you know, to be fair, he's already been roasted on Jabba's sail barge. You're going through the street market, entering this building. You know, you get the idea that this is meant to be like a really well hidden, and basically the door is a curtain. You know, if you look at the helmet, you kind of think, God, how do I see? And you just know that going down the spiral staircase is going to be horrible. You know, you see, he basically walks down the stairs into this Mandalorian covert. Everyone's wearing helmets. You get to see so many different Mandalorians, and then you get the Mythosaur skull, and it's like, you know, you're in Mandalorian territory here. Now, this is probably, I mean, every scene with the armorer is just fantastic. Like, you're being schooled in Mandalorian lore here. I love the look of the character. I love the design. I love the helmet. I was on an episode of Jam Transmissions with Pete and Eden, and we were talking about Mandalorian. And Eden brought up a really interesting idea that the horns on the armorer's helmet could be something to do with Maul and Mandalorian, the Mandalorians. Maybe that's her signet, having horns on her helmet. So maybe she was part of Bo-Katan's group who fought against Darth Maul. And, you know, after he took over Death Watch. I love her helmet as well. It just looks like a Spartan helmet. You know, she's saying, oh, we'll make you a pauldron. And you just see it's like blacksmithing. Just looks fantastic. And the music in the scene kind of crossfades, and again we learn more about Mandalorians, foundling, there's like the remnants of, you know, the like they make his pauldron, and then what's left will go towards sponsoring foundlings. So essentially, is that gonna, does that mean they're gonna be making armor for the foundlings? Is that gonna be crafting helmets for them. And then, of course, we're seeing backs, like some history, like a mother and father in the middle of a war zone, hiding a kid in a compartment wearing red hoods, you know. I mean, it's easy to assume that this was, that is a young Mando. And we get to see what's under his armor as well, like on his bodysuit, you've got like these magnetic strips essentially that keep his armor in place. Like, these are the things like you'd never realize you were ever going to learn. Like, just from like seeing Boba Fett in Return of the Jedi and Empire Strikes Back, like, okay, guy's wearing armor. Like, here we're actually learning how the armor is put together and what it takes to be a true man. Like, true Mandalorian armor is made out of Beskar. There's something very Tatooine about this planet, but again, it's probably because it's a desert planet that I'm saying it. A lot more rockier than Tatooine. Sure, Tatooine has some rocky places, but this planet, and I can never remember the name of this planet, it's something seven. You know, it's very, looks similar, but like once you get into it, it's very different terrain. I'm really interested in how these fobs work, because it's like, right, you just go near a planet and it beeps at you incessantly. And here we get the blurgs. Now, I know that these are they're CGI, but there are moments when they look practical, which I think is a fantastic. Like, this scene here where Mando's fighting a blurg, like, it just looks so, it looks like he's basically fighting a giant puppet. And in comes another one. That one feels CGI. But that first one definitely seems to be more practical. And here we have Kuil. The first fan favourite character of the series. Who would have thought that a Nick Nolte voiced Ugnaught with a brilliant catchphrase would become a fast favourite of Star Wars fandom? I have spoken. Now, I cannot say how many times I've attempted to use that successfully in at work or just generally in life. I like Kuil's house. I like the how it is designed outside. And here we're learning more about what goes on this planet. Like, so much exposition in this episode, but you know, it doesn't feel bogged down. It feels necessary, but you know, at the same time, you continue to be entertained. And the fact that he's negotiating with Kuil for his help, and Kuil's just like, yeah, I want half. What, half of the bounty? No, the blurgs. Then you find out he's got to ride one. He's like, what? And again, more Mandal. Oh, no, not in this bit. But once he, now he's outside, you know, trying to tame the blurg. And the lore is just so well done. Like, we find out more and more little things. Like, maybe if you took off your helmet, well, maybe it knows that I tried to roast it alive. Well, you know, we find out that, you know, Mando doesn't take off his helmet. He doesn't, you know, it's against the rules for him. Mando versus Blur. Mando trying to tame Blurg. Hilarious. And he's just so impatient. You're Mandalorian, you. ancestors rode the great mythosaur. So it's like, you know what? I want to see them riding a mythosaur. Can we get, like, some sort of... I don't know. And maybe, oh, what if we find one in the High Republic? What if, like, at some point we see Mandalorians and mythosaurs in the High Republic? Or would it have to be much earlier in the timeline than that? Mando attempting to calm a blurg. Kind of works. You know, who'd have thought, you know, you just have to go over and pet this weird lizard piranha T-Rex thing to get it to like you. Interesting. That's a pretty epic shot as he jumps onto the back of the blurg. And now he can ride the weird piranha lizard T-Rex thing. Oh, the music is fantastic. Oh, I genuinely love listening to this, to the soundtracks to these episodes. I got all 8 episodes worth of music on Amazon Music and listened to it straight through, and oh, so good, just perfect. And the Mandalorian theme is just wonderful. Oh. I like how Kuil just doesn't want to get paid. And he's basically just helping Mando because he wants to see peace return to the valley. And I think that's really... this, like, he's not in it for money, he's just in it to see his home get back to normal. He's never met the Mandalorian, he's only heard the stories. Now, that's just, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, we just, it's like more exposition, but so, again, well done, and not bogging us down with stories or anything like that. It's like, right, this is it, and it's done. So we get to see more of Mando not liking droids. He didn't like the droid at the beginning in the speeder, so he wanted Brian Pushane to drive him, but, you know, who wouldn't? And you've got a compound full of Nikto, which is really funny, because it's like, you look at them, it's like, oh, look, it's Niku people, it's Niku's people, but Niku is so much nicer than them. And then here we get IG-11, aka Taika Waititi as the Star Wars Terminator. I mean, the character isn't meant, IG-11 isn't meant to be comic relief, but the way he's portrayed is actually, he's so serious, it's funny. And I love the way that they have the IG unit, this IG droid, moving. Like, we never got to see it in the original trilogy, and then, you know, we see it some in Clone Wars, but seeing it in live action is just so cool. How is it Mando, whenever he gets shot, is always in the shoulder? Is it because the best guy's shiny, so it makes a better target? This is kind of like a precursor, a hint to stuff in episode 3, thinking that he's the only one, that IG-11 is the only one on the job. But we learn more about that in episode 3, and I think that really helps with, like, the surprise of what we get in episode 3. I love how he's made to look like the character, one of the characters from, I think it's Lee Van Cleef, his character from The Good, the Bad and the Ugly, with the dual bandanas over his shoulders. And then here we go, into the battle, which is just fantastic. It looks so good, like Mando and IG-11 taking on these thugs. You know, working together, you know, you just know that Mando would totally, like, he's just working with the IG unit, hoping the IG unit gets destroyed in this battle, but he just uses him for as long as he needs to. I don't know if IG-11 is, don't think he's, motion captured. You know, he's got to be all CGI, but at the same time, like, it just, everything looks so practical that, I mean, I know they built an IG-11, they built an IG-11 for a stand-in, I guess. Initiating self-destruct. Like, seriously, a droid, a droid with a death wish is hilarious. And this is like a gag that could have gone on way too long. This, don't self-destruct, I'm going to self-destruct. But it, you know, it's one of those spots of humour that, you know, it doesn't get old, but it really could have done. But I think that's just a credit to Jon Favreau's writing and just the way that this is seen as put together. Oh, look, we're going to try and self-destruct again in a second. And then you get the cannon being brought in. So good. No, stop it. Self-destruct counter. No. And then IG-11 gets blasted to hell. Poor IG-11. And then we get Mando just being Mando, jumping onto that cover cannon, blasting away at people. So well done. Just legendary. I mean, there's a reason this series is so well loved. It's just moments like that which are so fun and enjoyable. Poor IG-11. He didn't get to blow up. IG-11 ring diagnostics. Oh, it's fine. We need to get the door open and they both turn and look at the blaster. Brilliant. Door falls down. Beautiful iconic shot of Mando and IG-11 walking in together. I mean, everything about this just screams Western, and it just feels fantastic. It looks beautiful. And here we go. That this fantastic. Oh, I mean, I've got to be honest, who would have thought this, who could have even considered this reveal here? I mean, you can't see anything until the reverse shot, and you see like this head and these ears just until right now the child lowers the blanket. And there it is. And you know, like, instantly, as soon as you see him, as soon as you see the child, you feel something for it. You feel protective over it. And this is exactly what Mando does as well. Mando suddenly feels protective over it, even though he's like, he's doing it as a job. There's something about the way he blasts, you know, him blasting IG-11, and then the way he kind of... This is a credit to the actor. I mean, I don't know if it is Pedro Pascal in the mask right at that moment, but just the way he looks at the child just is... It's like you can tell right there that he's feeling something. You're not quite sure what, but it's definitely something sympathetic. And, you know, you feel it. You feel like him caring in that moment. And yeah, fantastic, just beautiful episode. I love the artwork we get as over the credits. You wonder if it was done after they finished the episode, or if it was before the episode, or before they made the episode, if it's concept art, or if it's, you know, something that they did afterwards, like taking key moments and going, yeah, let's do this. But, you know, whichever way it was done, it just looks brilliant. That is like one of my favourite shots with Mando and IG-11 stood together. And then you get Mando on the Blurg, which is made to look like Boba Fett on, no, Stormtrooper on G-Bag from A New Hope, but yeah, it looks really good. Ah, so there we go, that's it. Chapter 1, The Mandalorian. Audio commentary. So, before I go, I would like to thank all of you for your continued contributions to the blog and podcast. It means a great deal to me. It's thanks to you guys that I've been able to get some new equipment. I'm able to pick up stuff that I can write and talk about. And you guys are really helping keep the blog and podcast going. Kind of helping with the content generation and coming soon, better audio quality. Like I said, it means a great deal to me. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you for your contributions. And this is the way I have spoken. Hello and welcome to the Life Debt Commentaries. I'm your host, Johnny. Today we're taking a look at The Mandalorian Chapter 2 called The Child. Hello, Lily. How are you tonight? Really? Okay. You gonna watch Mandalorian with me? Hear that, folks? I have a way with animals. So we're going to start watching Mandalorian Chapter 2 in a moment, if Lily can just vacate the microphone. Oh! Ow. Thanks, Lily. Sorry, she just managed to claw my finger. Okay. So to start it off, let's just start at the episode. Remember, this is Chapter 2, The Child. So you start at the episode, pause it, go back to 000, and ready, steady, let's play it now. Disney Plus logo, original. Previously on The Mandalorian. Now, I've never really been a fan of the previously ons, but when it's a week... When it's a weekly show, then I completely get it. But they pretty much just give you the entirety of episode one in this one. And it's like, you could have just, you know, chopped it down a little bit, maybe. It's like, let's just watch all of episode one, except really quick. But yeah, we're about to hit the thing. Of course, we've got to see Baby Yoda. And bang, IG-11 hits the ground. Let's touch fingers. And then the lame intro with the helmets. Oh, do we have the lame intro with the helmets? Lucasfilm Limited. Yes, we do. I really don't like this. I get it, but yeah, we don't need it. Okay, here we go. Now, I've got to say, before we start, this is my favourite... Well, probably one of my favourite episodes of this season. Just everything about this episode, for me, was brilliant. So, starting off with that little lizard and the Mando walking through the caverns with Baby Yoda, hovering along beside him. Now, I know in the first episode, Quill says that, you know, the only way to get there was by riding Blurk. But I think that was meant to be the element of surprise because, you know, they're walking back to the Razor Crest pretty easily. Then this one just takes them a bit longer. Baby Yoda's just looking at all the lizards. I love Baby Yoda. Or the child. It's the child, isn't it, everyone? We have to call it the child. But yes, he's cute. You hear the rustling. And then you just get this moment. You see some shadows. And in the Mando's helmet, you see... Wait for it. Oh, two people just jumping across the cavern in his helmet. It's like, oh, wow. Amazing. Out comes the blaster. Now, I really don't like the Trandoshans in this scene. They just don't look like Trandoshans. They look like Trandoshans by the way of Star Trek. And it just doesn't look right. If they weren't called if they didn't call them Trandoshans, I would have been like, okay, cool. But like the physiology just seems a bit wrong. The arms are normal size. But here we get it. Pulse rifle. And disintegrated. First time we see it in action. And that's so cool. But yeah, they don't feel like Trandoshans. They look very Star Trek villain, and for me, that's kind of like the biggest downside of this episode, is the look of them. Just don't call them Trandoshans, call them something else, and we'd be like, and I'm like, yep, I'm in. Because Trandoshans have got weird arms. So here we see Mando being more badass. What's he doing? He's cauterizing the wound on his arm using an electric, scanny thing. Or like a taser or something. And it's just like, dude's badass. And you see Baby Yoda just doing stuff. He's climbing out of his cot thing. And he's like, let me just reach my hand up. I want to love you. I want to touch you. And he's like, what are you doing? And it's like, what's he trying to do? And Mando's just like, no, you're not. Get back in here. And Baby Yoda's like, what? Say what? And now he's like fixing his armor. And like, this is the first time we see the inside of Mandalorian armor, which is pretty cool. And like, kind of how it's all made up. Oh, look, Baby Yoda's back. He's going to try and heal me. Spoilers. It's like, Baby Yoda just doesn't get it. He's like, why don't you want me to help you? And then he closes it up. It's bedtime. Bedtime, Baby Yoda. I just love the music. Next day in the coming over the horizon, and the music is like, it feels very John Williamsy, but not at the same time. Jawas trashing the Razor Crest. That's like so nuts. I legit, in this, for this entire sequence, made me want to get the Jawa Sandcrawler set that came out a couple of years ago. I love that. Baby, he's like, disintegrate the guy, and Baby Yoda's like, ooh, what's going on here? But yeah, I legit wanted to buy the Sandcrawler just because of this sequence. I love how you can tell this is like miniature work as well with the Sandcrawler. And, you know, it just makes all that difference, doesn't it? It's like in Rise of Skywalker, the Sandcrawler at the end was all practical as well. And they did a really good job with that. Mando climbing up the Sandcrawler. I totally wanted to buy this, to get that set, and just set it up and have Mando, have like my Mando minifigure climbing up it. It'd be amazing. And like just get as many Jawas as possible, Jawa minifigures as possible. It'd be so cool. I've always found like with the New Hope, Jawas are just like these annoying creatures. They're just annoying. And then you get them in this and they actually kind of feel quite funny instead of just like, oh, what? What? Oh, no. Oh, no. It just died. Okay, I'm back. So Mando's climbing up. Oh, he's speaking Jawa. Oh, we've gone back a couple of seconds. So it's he's about to... Yeah, Mando's about to get hit by the rocks. And he rolls up onto the thingy. Rolls up onto the ledge. And he's safe. And now Jawas are just throwing random bits of trash at him. And everyone's like, where's Baby Yoda though? Where's Baby Yoda? And there he is, speeding along. Beside the Sandcrawler. Like, just... It's like, there he is, he's trying to... Finally, he's able to, like, use his grappling hook. And here we have Batman 1966 going on. With Batman climbing up the side of the building. Brilliant! Jawas electrocuting Mando through the hatches. You hear the trash pulling Jawa out. And you hear the trash bouncing off his arm. It's brilliant. Oh, and now they're trying to break the Sandcrawler. It's like, oh, come on. Just can't catch a break. And then suddenly, there he is. He's at the top. All the Jawas electrocute him. And... Thump. There he goes. And he's down. And... Oh. Then Baby Yoda's sad. And then Baby Yoda's happy. Because Mando sits up. Fennel says they don't like Baby Yoda. They're just wrong. So they go back to the trashed Razor Crest. Mando just tries to figure... All of Mando's guns are gone. Just walking through the Razor Crest. It's like a completely different ship to what it was. Because everything's just missing. But they kept the chair. They couldn't take his chair. And he's just like... Trying to get it to work. And the engines are just like... No. Not playing. Oh. And then he sits down in his bunk, just like, what am I gonna do? And there's the child in one of his most famous moments, just looking up and being like, come on, we can fix this, we can sort it. And off they go. Like, what is just fantastic is, with the exception of the Jawas and the fight noises and Mandalorian grunting and sighing, this is pretty much a silent movie at this point. And it doesn't need any dialogue. Beautiful western shot there, Mando and Baby Yoda walking across the horizon. And we're Quill's home. But yeah, this is like the first bit of actual dialogue, and you know, it really works. If it had gone on longer, it would be really dull. It would have gotten boring. But you know, kind of what we have, about 10 minutes of no dialogue, and it just works. I love that line. Cool. This is what was causing all the fuss. And it's like, yeah. At this point, the, what they called, the, subtitles call Quill, Ugnaught. And it's like, fair enough, they can't, they're not naming him as if it's some sort of spoiler, even though it's all over the Funko Pops and everyone kind of knows it. Oh, I have spoken. Baby Yoda and the frog. Baby Yoda eat frog. Baby Yoda, not hungry anymore. This is one of my favourite moments in this episode. It's, for me, it's really iconic, with Quill riding the Blurg, dragging the wagon with Mando sat on it in the rain, and the music just, oh yes, everything about that these two shots just is fantastic. And then we get to the Jawas. Oh look, let's talk. We're going to trade. Oh look, people to trade, yes. I can't believe they got Nick Nolte to speak in Jawa. Brilliant Star Wars humour. They don't like you for some reason. Well, I did disintegrate a few of them. You know, very matter of fact. Weapons are my part of my religion. It's like, kind of shows more that Mandalorian isn't a race. It's something else. As we learn later on in the season, it's a creed, which I kind of think. I mean, like, we see different Mandalorians taking off helmets and stuff, but these guys don't take off their helmets. It's probably like different sects of the Mandalorian religion. So, like, this sect is probably more hardcore than, say, Death Watch, because they all take the helmets off. Well, most of them, some of them take the helmets off, at least. Sabine takes the helmet off, but does she really class herself as Mandalorian? She probably does after season 3 onwards. The second half of season 3, because of everything that she goes through with the Darksaber and reuniting with her family. this kind of makes me feel like, you know, so you got the Catholics, you got the Protestants, you got the Quakers and Lutherans. I'm not sure. Different sects of the of this religion. Following the same concept, but some have got more strict rules. And I think he's probably part of one of those. The suka, the egg. Suka, 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 suka. So this is probably, again, brilliant use of models, and this bit is just this, the creepy Jawa just looking at him in the cockpit of the Sandcrawler, just going, "Sooga." I remember going to when I saw Rise of Skywalker at the cinema, I was getting a coffee because goodness me, it was late, and because I did the midnight screening, and I was there with Patreon Becky and her husband, and as I was getting this drink, I turned around and there was someone dressed up as a Jawa, and I was like waving at Becky and pointing, and all I could think was going, yeah, was yelling "Sooka, Sooka," because it was a guy dressed as a Jawa, and I wanted to go up to him and be like "Sooka," but I didn't know if he would get it. And yeah, you could definitely tell I was either really, really tired or really hot up on coffee. So this sequence is, I think, fantastic. Absolutely brilliantly done. Like, from the moment he's going into the cave, he's like checking his weapons, making sure everything's in place, everything getting loaded up. Out comes the blast. Now, I really would have gone with taking the pulse rifle in first. Really to save any sort of damage, but, you know, he doesn't know what he's walking into. I mean, all they're saying is the egg, the egg, the egg. They're not saying what egg. Now, when we first saw this thing in the trailers, I thought it was kind of like like a reek that we saw in what's it called, Attack of the Clones, and I thought that would have been a really cool callback, you know. And it's like it's a reek but on a different planet, so it's like it's evolved in a different way, so it's got fur instead of just like rhino scaly dinosaur skin kind of thing. Bang, bang, bang. Pew, pew, pew. Pew, pew, pew. Raw thunk. And out. Oh, the music. The music in this series. Ludvig Göransson just has made so many iconic themes in this just in this season. I mean, as soon as you hear this. Yep. Mudhorn Angry. As soon as you hear the music in this, like when you're not watching it, you just know it's Mudhorn. This thing's just angry. Why is it going after Baby Yoda? So now it's going back for Mando, and of course Mando preps his flamethrower. The flamethrower, it just needs to stop. It needs to give up with the flamethrower, because this thing is, it very rarely works out for him. And now he's grappling hooked onto it. He's like water skiing on the back from the rear of the Mudhorn, and he just gets thrown around. Poor Mando, he's got no hope. Oof. Oh, you can't help but feel for every bang and knock he's getting, you know. Now he's fading out and he's like, you know, you just know this guy's not got much more fight left in him. But you know what, he's going for it, and I believe this is the first time we see a vibroblade in use. So he's taking out the vibroblade, holding it up, and you just see it vibrating. And Mudhorn's coming up, then Baby Yoda hand, and then the Mudhorn stops. And I remember watching this for the first time and just being, what the hell? And here you go again. Subtitles say uplifting music as the Mudhorn rises in the air. But this, you just hear this and I just think Baby Yoda. And Mandalorian's just like, I'm confused. He's like, Baby Yoda just gave you a pass. He's letting you kill it? For such a big animal, that small ass knife just doesn't feel like it would cut it, but it does. Pretty quickly as well. I mean, that's just a giant beast. You know, now Mando's just shuffling and limping. Yeah, I mean, a guy doesn't need to build a ship. He needs to spend a day in a bacta tank after that beating. And Baby Yoda's taking a nap. He's so cute. I want to get the animatronic Baby Yoda. Now, I've got to say, that is probably the most disturbing looking egg I've ever seen in my life, but who am I to say? Furry eggs. That can't feel good coming out. Those Jawas, they have no faith in our hero. Quill, of course. He knows that the Mando will be back. So he's gonna wait. I love the animatronics on the Quill mask. Like, it feels very early 90s Jim Henson, think Ninja Turtles movies. But it works. And I love how they make it look like Nick Nolte. And here they get the Jawas are just like, Soga. I love it, like they walk around with the egg. Mando's just carrying his armor around. Soga! Such a clean cut. I mean, this has got to be the world's biggest Cadbury cream egg. If all it takes is one egg to get all of your, all the missing parts of your ship back, then, you know, dude should just carry a load of Mudhorn eggs around with him everywhere he goes. If you think about it, Blurgs are really strong. If he's pulling that much weight behind it. But they are a weird little T-Rex piranha lizard thing. So, you know, probably a lot of muscle there. Oh, Baby Yoda's so cute. It's weird. Like, you know, throughout this episode, you see Baby Yoda in episode one. Or, sorry, chapter one. And it, you know, you're like, oh my god, it's a Baby Yoda. Oh my god, it's really cute. And then in this episode, like, you see how cute Baby Yoda is, and it really kind of brings out parental instincts. Like, these were feelings I haven't felt for a good, like, 2 years, like, whilst my daughter was, like, a baby, you know, since she was a baby, you know, like this. I mean, you always have, like, these parental feelings of must protect, you know, love and caring, all, you know, all these parental feelings, of course, but to have them for a little puppet, animatronic little puppet. is a credit to the creators of Baby Yoda. Like, I'm not talking like Favreau who wrote it and Filoni. I'm talking like the people who made it. You know, they've made this fantastic model that just does so much and is so expressive, and, you know, it's and a massive achievement, I think. The amount that they're able to do with it is an achievement. Oh, and the Razor Crest is up and running. And suddenly Mando looks a lot less mucky and his armor feels a bit more intact. But that's not hard, seeing as it was falling apart. So I want to go visit Quill and, you know, with broken stuff. Because if I'm his guest and he's at my service, I want him to fix my shit. This was really a shock that Quill doesn't go with him. Like, I kind of felt like he would. You know, because, I mean, they built up Quill, they built up IG-11, they built up Cara Dune. And, you know, Mando working with all of them, you kind of felt like he'd be putting together the crew throughout the season. But instead it's like, right, I work with you and you go. I work with you and I go. I work with you and I go. And then they all come together at the end. It was very different to what I thought, but I mean, who am I to say that my presumptions of how the Mandalorian should have gone were right? Uplifting music is the intro of the theme, and it's amazing. And the ship comes back on. Nice little wave to Quill. And up he goes. Oh, I love the music. I love the Razor Crest, and it's amazing. I love how they did it with models. Like, so much of this was done practically, you know, as much as they could, and you can tell. It just makes it feel very Star Wars, for lack of a better term. And here we go. Checking on Baby Yoda. Sleeping Baby Yoda. So cute. So cute. And then just in the background, he starts to get up. Oh. And off Mando goes. So it was directed by Rick Famuyiwa, and he did a cracking job. And written by Jon Favreau. I'm pretty sure, I think, yeah, Favreau wrote the first four episodes himself, and then episodes 7 and 8. I definitely feel like you can definitely tell the ones that were written by Favreau. They're a lot stronger than the episodes not written by Favreau. Not to say that Filoni and Famuyiwa did bad jobs at writing the episodes that they did, but I just feel like, you know, as the creator, Favreau really knew where he was going with it. And, you know, rather than do 6 episodes, rather than just doing 6 episodes, they, you know, let's do 2 more, what shall we do? They have, and, you know, he brings in, what's his name? Brings in, Favreau to direct, to write 5, and Rick Famuyiwa wrote number 6, with someone else, I can't remember who that was. But yeah, the strongest episodes are definitely the ones that Favreau writes. Mandalorian Chapter 2, The Child, it's just finished. It's the short episode, But I said earlier, like the opening kind of 10 minutes with the silent film aspect, like just no dialogue, really works for me. But if it had gone on too long, then it would have gotten dull. And then of course you have I think kind of like 5 minutes of just talking with Jawas, followed by kind of another 10 minutes with kind of like going to the Mudhorn, fighting the Mudhorn, coming back, fixing the ship. You know, if the Mudhorn battle had gone any longer, it would have been too long. If they'd have focused more on, they'd focus more time on the rebuilding of the ship. Again, you know, everything just felt so right. The timings felt right. And I really feel like this is such a brilliantly put together episode. It's definitely, I'm going to just reiterate, it is probably one of my favourite episodes of this season. Just for the pure execution and just absolutely near perfect episode of television. All round. So, yeah. Well, that's it for this episode. I'm just going to say thank you for your continued support of the Life Debt Project. You know, I couldn't be recording this right now. Well, I could be recording this right now, but it sounds better than it would have done because thanks to Patreon members, I've got a microphone. And, you know, that's because of you guys and your support. Kind of the, you know, your contributions go towards more stuff for the My Stars Life Debt Project to write about, talk about. So yeah, there's quite a bit of content coming out now that I wouldn't be able to do without you guys. So it is greatly appreciated. So yes, thank you very much. Like I said, I appreciate it so much, and yeah, so thank you, and I have spoken.
Hello, and welcome to My Star Wars Life Debt. I'm Johnny Orm, your host, and today we're doing something a bit unconventional. I'm going to interview a non-Star Wars fan. We're about to start the interview in just a second. Please forgive us if there are any audio problems. This isn't exactly a great setup, and we are going to be recording in a large warehouse, so it could be a bit echoey, but bear with us, and I'm sure it'll be a great chat. Okay, here we go.